Today's WBFO brief was recorded at around 8:30 in the morning. This is WBFO News.
Local drivers will be seeing a simple, emphatic message: no new jail for Erie County. 8 billboards are being posted around Buffalo to push back against plans to build a new $250 million Erie County jail. Opponents say the funds would be better spent combating the root causes of crime, including poverty, housing insecurity, and a lack of adequate mental health services. Impacted family members of those who died in custody will discuss the billboards at a morning press conference, where they'll be joined by members of Black Love Resists and the Russ, Voice Buffalo, Halt Solitary, and other advocacy groups. After calling off a planned strike, employees at 2 Western New York care facilities are celebrating a new ratified one-year contract. SEIU 1199 organizers, representing employees at Williamsville Suburban Care and Sapphire Rehabilitations in Tonawanda, say they're happy with the deal, which administrative organizer Emmanuel White says addresses the two highest areas of concern.
The agreement package included other things as it related to work conditions as well, but the discrepancy was regarding the pay scale, experience-based pay, and we did get those things resolved.
White says it's been a revolving door of new hires at the two nursing facilities. It's now hopeful changes in the contract will help with recruiting and retaining workers. The number of car crashes involving pedestrians or cyclists continues to rise in the area. Go Bike's executive director Justin Booth cited the statistics from the New York State Department of Transportation.
In Erie County, from 2018 to 2023, there were 34,600 crashes on our roadways, resulting in injury or death for an average of over 5,700 per year. By the county's calculations, the cost of these hospitalizations, emergency department visits, cost us as taxpayers over $354 million per year.
Those statistics have prompted Senator Sean Ryan and Assemblymember John Rivera to introduce legislation called Complete Streets, designed to make roads safer for everyone. The Buffalo and Erie County Botanical Gardens will be seeing upgrades with $500,000 in state funding. The grant will be used to revitalize the early childhood play space and relocate the cacti and succulent collection to a more accessible area. The funding was announced by Assemblymember Pat Burke. Today is International Overdose Awareness Day, with community members and local leaders coordinating a day of education and remembrance. At the corner of Franklin and Church Streets in downtown Buffalo, a memorial display will be set up from 10 until 2. And community members are invited to share pictures of family and loved ones who have been lost to an opioid overdose. According to the Department of Health, Erie County has lost over 200 residents to suspected or confirmed drug overdoses this year.
This WBFO Brief podcast is made possible by Canisius University, where high-flying grifts find a top-flight education. For the last 8 years, Canisius has been recognized on U.S. News' list of best colleges and universities. Learn more at canisius.edu.
Well, as students around Western New York gear up for another school year, some are entering the classroom with new cell phone use policies. Schools in Niagara Falls, Dunkirk, and most recently Lackawanna have taken steps to all but eliminate cell phones in class. Administrators say they're doing it to improve student attention while learning, but UB Assistant Professor of Counseling, School and Education Psychology, Dr. Catherine Lee Osrush, argues it's not preventative, it's reactionary.
Right now, you know, everybody is worried about safety, which is important, I think, is definitely the red flag. We then need to consider, okay, so if technology is an aspect of this student, who they are, how they're navigating, we know that technology is going to be essential in career and work. How are we going to then integrate it? And I see that there needs to be, again, some norms around that.
Over recent months, Governor Kathy Hochul has been meeting with school district leaders to discuss possible statewide action on cell phones in schools. WBFO's Ryan Zunner is going to be getting into this conversation considerably more starting Labor Day as we get further into the school year. Well, in government, New York State Senator Sean Ryan's campaign has registered a new fundraising committee linked to the state. WBFO's Holly Kirkpatrick reports.
The Sean Ryan Victory Fund was registered on July 22nd, raising questions about the state senator's plans for the future. However, Ryan did not specify the potential state positions he may have his eye on.
I opened up a second committee because, you know, in government and politics, you have to be ready for things that could happen, you know, years in advance. And if you don't pre-plan, you can't catch up. So you have to stay, you know, current. And so if opportunities do become available in the future, that you're ready for it.
So why now? Is it because it's an election year, for example?
Yeah, this is an election year, and you know, you never know when there's going to be changes in, you know, statewide offices. So if you want to be in those conversations, you have to be ready.
The senator's name has been associated with a potential run for Buffalo mayor to replace Byron Brown, who is currently serving an unprecedented fifth term, which ends December 31st, 2025. But the new committee is only registered to raise funds for state offices, not local. However, according to the New York State Board of Elections, if a candidate running for state office decides to make a change and run for a local office instead, they could utilize something called a Type 2 transfer under election law. That moves funds from the original committee to the new committee. So theoretically, Ryan could raise dollars for the undisclosed state office and transfer the funds to a new county registered committee in the future if he so desires. And Ryan did not provide a solid answer when WBFO asked him to confirm or deny the rumours that he'll run in the next mayoral election in November 2025.
I'm very happy representing the folks from Western New York and the 61st Senate District. I like what I'm doing. We have a lot of work to get done, and I'm concentrating on representing the people of the 61st Senate District.
Holly Kirkpatrick, WBFO News.
On a recent afternoon, a group of reporters and producers from WBFO found themselves in Jamestown, inside the historic Hotel Jamestown. Now mostly converted into housing, the Jamestown landmark retains a glittering reminder of its past with its crystal ballroom. And it was in that space we were treated to a performance of Indian classical dance.
It's hard. It's not easy.
It looks hard.
It's not easy. It takes a lot of discipline. It takes a lot of practice and a lot of patience with yourself. Like, you're not going to get it right away, and that's okay. It's a lot of work. But it's fun. It's very fun.
A graduate of Slippery Rock University, where she studied dance, Grace Larson was reflecting on the work ahead in preparation of the inaugural Jamestown Dance Festival, running next weekend, September 7th and 8th, and hailed as a celebration of dance forms and cultural expressions featuring international artists. The festival is being driven by the Sikanya Burman Dance Company.
This Indian classical form of Bharatanatyam. It is a very, very old form. It dates back to, like, you know, 5,000 years ago.
Sikanya Burman.
Yeah, it's really ancient. It has its roots in the Indus Valley civilization, they say. And India has a rich history of arts. We have 8 different Indian classical forms, and I have barely scratched the surface, so I have just learned Bharatanatyam and another form of Kathak later on in my life.
Her professional career in India started in the sciences, but Sikanya Burman's journey to Jamestown is as unlikely as it is fascinating. And we'll be hearing more from Sikanya Burman next week on What's Next as part of a greater look at how arts and culture are impacting Jamestown and Chautauqua County. Beyond bringing renowned performers in for next weekend's Jamestown Dance Festival, the event is also providing an opportunity for members of the Sikanya Burman Dance Company, lifelong dancers from the region who are committing their time, energy, and talents to the Indian classical art form. Tabitha Shelvin grew up in Silver Creek and is working to get back on the floor after surgery to repair a labral tear.
I feel like with all of our different skills, I like to see how everyone's training from different backgrounds all blend together yet show our differences. But when I'm dancing myself, I like to enjoy the moment and really feel it in my own body. But then when as an audience member or when you're observing class, it's nice to get to see everyone's strengths and weaknesses both help each other and then show your individual self.
Along with Grace Larson, Tabitha will be taking to the Regelinet stage next weekend with Grace Gibbons, a Jamestown native whose previous focus was on ballet.
I'm excited. I'm very nervous. But I'm extremely proud to be able to present something that's never occurred in this community before. I think that Jamestown has a lot of potential for live arts, and it's so exciting to feel like I'm part of the movement that's really expanding that, expanding the arts here.
The Sakanya Berman Dance Company will perform, along with other renowned artists, at the first ever Jamestown Dance Festival at the Reg Linnae Center for the Arts next weekend, September 7th and 8th. For WBFO, I'm Jay Moran.
For Theater Talk on WBFO, I'm Anthony Chase.
And I'm Peter Hall.
And Labor Day already?
Yes.
I cannot believe this.
The official end of summer and the start of, well, whatever fall season is your bag. In our case, theater, starting next week.
Theatrically, I think I've spent far too much time making my garden grow this summer. I spent family time, that was nice, but wow, it went so fast. God love the Shaw, they continue. Niagara on the Lake, they'll continue to entertain us through Thanksgiving.
And then on to their Christmas specials. And of course, the big show, My Fair Lady, just goes on and on for months. So
yeah, dancing all night.
So if you've been trying to get a ticket to My Fair Lady, have heart, you will get your ticket. You just might have to schedule it in the fall.
Right.
But as you know, going up there when the snow has fallen is delightful. The little village Niagara-on-the-Lake, it's sort of like a snow globe.
It is.
You want to shake it and see all the little shops.
Just as charming in the winter as it is in the summer. And then, of course, Curtain Up will be on the 13th.
We can back up a little more, and next week, just a matter of days, The Prom opens at Musical Fair. That's on Wednesday. And then Friday, the 6th, we have two at the same time. Monsters of the American Cinema, BUA, at the Compass Performing Arts Space, and Wipeout over at the Alleyway.
And I am back in the classroom teaching script analysis to 10 delightfully eager Buffalo State theater majors and film majors. Fun.
Oh, that's great. So you do have film students in your class as well as folks interested?
A few, yeah. And that makes for a dynamic class. In fact, we're starting with Olivier's 1948 film version of Hamlet.
Well, I remember that was my first Hamlet. And I have to admit, for years and years and years, everything else seemed to fall short.
You do get caught up in the story, eagerly awaiting what's going to happen next. Shakespeare maps it out beautifully. Not every production follows his map, as that one does.
Not to derail the conversation, but since you mentioned Shakespeare, I'm not sure if I ever heard your opinion of this summer's second Shakespeare in Delaware Park play, The Comedy of Errors. I was looking at some photos from that production. I loved it. I love it more as time passes.
Well, I liked the entire Shakespeare season, and I enjoyed Lawrence Gregory Smith's production of Comedy of Errors. Even though I felt that there were times when it was so truncated and fast that I didn't believe that anyone was actually following the story, but it didn't matter because from moment to moment, it was delightful. And in the park, which is so diffuse, sometimes that's the most you get. I recall Jonathan Sinan directing undergraduates in Macbeth and explaining to them that sometimes the audience is not going to follow more than this is a good thing, this is a bad thing. So in tempering the performance, and I thought that that production delivered those broad gestures very successfully. So are you trying to get me to validate whether or not you had a good time? Yes, you did. That is correct, Peter. You had a good time.
Oh, good. Now it's official. But as you were just speaking, sounded a lot like script analysis. So let's get back into the classroom. I believe that you have also said that these young people are well aware of artificial intelligence. You're trying to use artificial intelligence to further their education and not let them sort of get away with letting AI write their papers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the first thing everyone was concerned about is that students would cheat. Well, if you create assignments that can be done by artificial intelligence, I can ask any artificial intelligence to map out all the cause and effect events of any play. But I thought, you know, it's great fun to play with the artificial intelligence, have it do what it is you want to do, and then critique it.
So instead of asking AI to do script analysis, you're going to analyze AI.
Right. We do some of that and just playing with it. I had grad students in Irish drama last term, and they thought artificial intelligence was a howl because it hallucinates. That's jargon for makes things up. And so you'd get a play and you'd ask it to name characters who've fit this quality, this characteristic, and then it would say, oh, well, you know, Colleen in Shadow of a Gunman. And you go, well, wait a minute. There is no Colleen in Shadow of a Gunman. You just made that up. Whereas an undergrad might put that in a paper, a grad student would not. And it can be fun. Get it to challenge them. It can engage them even more. They will play and discuss plot structure for hours with an artificial intelligence to play along. It's as addictive as any video game.
So it seems as if the theater season is alive and well and safe, and the classroom continues, not in spite of, but having fun with artificial intelligence.
Energized by it, yeah. It's amazing. For Theater Talk on WBFO.
I'm Peter Hall.
And I'm Anthony Chase.
Don't forget to like or subscribe so you can help others find this podcast. And if you love it, leave a review too. The WBFO Brief Podcast and the award-winning journalism of WBFO's news team are made possible by our members. Thank you for listening.